Our ministry was before changed the name. And the name was the Ministry of Sports Promotion and Sports Economic Development. It's essential for us to promote sports, also to have a sport like industry and economy. We have a lot of young people. You know that our people are very young. So you're actually seeking opportunity for young people. You want sport to provide employment, to provide opportunities. So you have to professionalize it sports effectively. Currently, you know, sports talent are identified and exported to Europe, which means that we're selling muscle. We want them now to be in the country to contribute to creating add value so they can stay in our country. We want sport to be now source of wealth creation, job opportunities to develop very benefit for them to taking a sport like job, not to sell them Europe, to sell them. They want them to stay in our country so young people can benefit from sports economic inside of being exported abroad.
Paula Adanho is Ivory Coast Minister for the Promotion of Sports and the Development of the Sports Economy. He spoke with me from the commercial capital, Abidjan. Join us tomorrow for the conclusion of the conversation. Zimbabweans go to the polls in August to choose a new president and National Assembly. Analysts say President Emmerson Mnangagwa faces a tough challenge from Nelson Chamisa, the leader of the newly formed Citizens Coalition for Change. Local media reports say Chamisa, a former Minister for Information and Technology, is attracting support from the country's youth. This, as opposition groups express concern about intimidation and harassment of their supporters by state institutions, including the police and the judiciary. Accusations supporters of the ruling ZANU-PF party sharply rejected. Tyson Savior Kasukuwere is a presidential candidate and a former minister in the governing ZANU-PF party. He tells me that he is the best place to solve the challenges Zimbabweans face, in spite of criticisms that he was part of the problem.
I think I possess the qualities at this hour that are required to get this giant back on its feet again. I possess the political ability to navigate the difficult political terrain in our country. I have the economic managerial skills to be able to help Zimbabwe get back on an economic path of growth. I also have a very strong social belief that we've got to renew our social contract with our people. So I come from a very strong background in the civil service. I was the minister before, Minister of Youth Development, Indigenization, and Economic Empowerment. I also served as Minister of Environment and Climate, Water. I also served as Minister of Local Government, but I was also the Chief Party Organizer, National Commissar, meaning that I have accumulated a world of experience.
What do you say to your critics who say you were part of the system that created the mess Zimbabweans find themselves now? So why do you all of a sudden think you are the savior, so to speak, by your name, to rescue them from the mess that you contributed?
I'm the one who understands the mistakes. Now, if somebody has never made a mistake, then they're too bad to give an opportunity. It is those who have gone through the mill, who have seen the mistakes, who have seen the other side, who are able to stand up like I have said and say, no, we have a mess. We need to fix this mess. We need our country out of this quagmire. And because I understand exactly where the pain is, I understand exactly where the pots are, I understand exactly where the pans are, I also understand where the forks and knives are in the house.
About the issue of corruption, recently Zimbabweans have complained about endemic corruption in public institutions and in other places, even in private institutions. Give me specific steps you are going to take in order to address the issues of corruption in Zimbabwe.
First and foremost, you want a government itself that respects the rule of law. You want a leadership that is above the parapet. You want a leadership that is also conscious of their duty and responsibility. Fourthly, You also want to be able to carry with you the country in a determined fight against corruption. Now, these four are going to be determined by how our people vote on the 23rd of August. If they give me the mandate, then they have placed their future in the most safest pair of hands. I will discharge the fight against corruption in a judicious, fair, and very thorough way. Now, the last expose that we've seen and the kind of non-response by the Zimbabweans is an indication of a punch-drunk nation, a nation which does not know how best to resolve some of these problems. Corruption is mentioned, no investigations are carried out. People are named and nothing happens. And that can't continue. Hence, I have said, I'll stand up. We need to get to the bottom of this corruption. We need at the same time to fight the twin challenge of sanctions, which has given the corrupt cartels a convenient excuse to get involved in these shenanigans that affect the lives of our people. The blood of our people is being sucked by a few vampires. We need to stop that. And the way we're going to do that is by ensuring that we have a clean government, which is going to be built out of perhaps the best skilled person Zimbabwe has. And that's how I'm going to assemble a team that will be Team Zimbabwe, fighting against corruption, maladministration, greed, and sleaze.
And some Zimbabweans are telling me that the country is sharply divided into two. The incumbent president, so to speak, President Emmerson Mnangagwa, and the main opposition challenger, Mr. Chamisa. You being the third, they are accusing you of being a spoiler, being propagated by the system, so you snatch away some vote from the opposition so President Mnangagwa can win. Realistically, what do you think your chances are to become the next president of the Republic of Zimbabwe?
I'll be the next leader of Zimbabwe come the 23rd of August. I'll be the leader of the country, and I did not enter this race to snatch anyone's voters. If that happens, then tough luck. Those voters never belong to the one whom I might be dreaming that those voters are his or her. I am coming to this race with a very clear political agenda, a very clear economic program, and a very clear understanding of the issues at stake. The key issue at stake is about to bring unity, focus on our people and development. As it stands right now, this binary is not working. This toxicity is not working. We are sick and tired of him and her, me and you. We want to build a country where we, all as Zimbabweans, have equal access to opportunities, can be able to participate in their fields of endeavor without victimization.
Tyson Savior Kasukuwere is a presidential candidate and a former minister in the governing ZANU-PF. He spoke with me from the Zimbabwean capital, Harare. Listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of the Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotin, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the leader of the opposition party, Build One South Africa, is calling on the governing African National Congress, or ANC, to pressure Zimbabwe to ensure the coming elections are transparent and credible. Musi Maimane also says bad policies carried out by Zimbabwe's ruling party is to blame for what he says is the mass exodus of citizens to neighboring countries such as South Africa. Maimane asks that the ANC has not done enough to pressure the administration in Harare to create a level playing field to ensure credible elections. His remarks come after opposition groups expressed concern about intimidation and harassment of their voters in the run-up to the August polls. Meimani tells me that he believes the opposition could defeat the ZANU-PF in peaceful and transparent elections.
Kenyans have a famous saying that says, at first we must be liberated, and then we must liberate ourselves from the liberators. The truth of the matter is that ZANU-PF are trading in a coalition with the ANC as former liberators, and ZANU-PF now have become oppressors of the people of Zimbabwe. This is evidenced by the fact that it is clear that elections aren't free and fair. It is clear that activists are being locked up. It is clear that there's no such thing as free media in Zimbabwe. And South Africa, with its ally of the ANC, is sitting back observing the situation take place. So for us, as Build One South Africa, I stand strongly to say, if we want a stable SADC region that involves all the countries, we need to ensure that the people of Zimbabwe's will of electing a democratic government that is actually upholding of the rule of law, South Africa must stand and make sure we are intervening in that situation to ensure that dictators like Mnangagwa are removed. Because if we fail to do that, we are going to end up in a situation where South Africa and other African countries, Zambia, etc., have to now be spectators to Zimbabweans fleeing dictators to come into their own countries, often against their will. And often, as I have hosted many Zimbabwean activists in South Africa, where people are being chased out of their countries for fear of being killed.
Musi, so what specifically do you think ZANU-PF can do now in the run-up to the election to ensure that the elections are free, fair, transparent, and credible, and that will reflect the will of the people?
What I'm simply asking for is that let's allow for free political activity. No one should be arrested because they take a view against the government. We must scrap this new law that they have passed that ensures that, in fact, anyone cannot be critical of the government. We must furthermore call for the international community where, when we look at the nature of Zimbabweans, that an international election commission must be put there and must be independent to make sure best practices are on the table. Free speech must be upheld. And the army must pledge not to be involved in the elections. The army has got nothing to do with the security of elections. I will equally so be engaging, as we've noticed, even on minor things like increasing of fees for candidates, etc., so as to eliminate opposition, must be scrapped so that we can ensure that all the playing rules are the same for every candidate in Zimbabwe.
Musi, what do you say to supporters of the ANC who are of the view that the ANC can only advise ZANU-PF and cannot put pressure on them? Otherwise, it will be deemed as interfering in the internal dynamics of Zimbabwe, as well as undermining its territorial integrity, or for that matter, interfering in the sovereignty issues of Zimbabwe.
The nature of the problem is such that if it does not, we have gone through the idea of quiet diplomacy under President Mbeki, and all that ended up happening is porous borders between South Africa and Zimbabwe. And it is having challenges where Zimbabweans are now living in South Africa away from home for fear of these things. An economy is collapsing, and we cannot even begin to make an argument about immigration and immigration laws in South Africa because of the situation in Zimbabwe. If you want to deal with immigration, start in Zimbabwe. And therefore, what has become a Zimbabwean problem is fast becoming a South African crisis. So I maintain the view, even to ANC supporters, that we tried quiet diplomacy before, it has not worked. Now it is time for us to intervene. It's not even a function of undermining sovereignty. It's about upholding international law and making sure that Africa rids itself of dictators if we are going to be a continent of democrats.
Musi, what are your expectations for the upcoming elections in Zimbabwe?
No, I do not expect them at the current conditions. I can see all the trickery has begun. I don't expect them to be free and fair. That's why I'm putting up this challenge and this fight. And I'm urging all law-abiding citizens of the continent and citizens who want democracy to work to keep a strong eye on Zimbabwe, make sure elections are free and fair. I maintain that in a free and a fair election, ZANU-PF would not win that election.
Musi Meimani leads the Build One South Africa opposition party. He spoke with me from Johannesburg, South Africa. Watch has welcomed as good news a UK court decision stating that the government's Rwanda policy is illegal. In its ruling, the Court of Appeal said plans by the administration to send asylum seekers to Rwanda could violate their human rights. The government says it will contest the decision. But human rights groups are hailing the ruling. This, as government critics say, the policy is unethical and an affront to fairness. They also accuse the Rwandan government of repressing opponents, accusations the government routinely denies. Louise Mudge is the Central Africa Director at Human Rights Watch. He tells me that the ruling should encourage the UK government to abandon the policy.
We at Human Rights Watch, we have not been quiet about our position with regards to this plan by the UK government to try to escape its obligations in providing asylum to asylum seekers, and also in sending people who are seeking asylum in the UK to a third country that fundamentally doesn't respect broad issues with regards to human rights. And so we think this is good news in the UK, which is a country that has really been in some ways not experiencing many bright spots with regards to its human rights track record. And this also, I think this is the UK court sending a clear and strong message that despite the fact that this Tory government and the government of Rwanda really wanted to present Rwanda as a rights-respecting country, that the facts simply don't match up with that narrative. Rwanda is a country where it is very, very dangerous to be against the political powers of the Rwanda Patriotic Front, the party in power. And so it sends a strong message, in our opinion, and it is a good day.
The UK government said it will appeal against the ruling. What are your expectations for or hopes following the human rights strong opposition to this asylum-seeking policy by the UK government?
Well, the judiciary in the UK is not like the judiciary in Rwanda in so much as that it remains independent. And so we are cautiously optimistic that this ruling will stand because on the face of it, this should not be a legal and lawful system. And the UK courts have acknowledged that. So we expect this ruling to stand.
Well, some people are suggesting that this is a vindication of the importance of the rule of law and basic fairness. Is that the stance of your organization?
Yeah, we at Human Rights Watch absolutely see this as the vindication of rule of law. The fact is that sometimes when you have a country like Rwanda where the rule of law is not respected and where the judiciary is not independent, sometimes you need a judiciary in a different country, such as the United Kingdom in this instance, to really make that assertion that this is a context, this immoral and illegal deal that the Tories were trying to push through was being done in a context in which there is judicial oversight. And the UK courts have spoken, and they have said that this is not legal.
The Prime Minister said he fundamentally disagrees with the ruling, although the Court of Appeal ruled that Rwanda had not provided enough safeguards to provide it a safe third country. What are your thoughts?
Well, the UK Prime Minister can say whatever he wants. I mean, of course he's going to say that because this was his policy. This was the policy of his Tory party. Him saying that still doesn't make this a legitimate, a moral and a fair and valid policy. This policy from the very first day it was released under Boris Johnson, this policy has been a complete disaster. And I really would – it's not my job to be a political consultant, but if I were one, I would advise the UK Prime Minister to abandon this policy because it is not going to move forward as the UK courts have so demonstrated.
looking at this court case and the ruling, what happens if it's abandoned?
What's important to note here is that not one person was actually sent under this UK deal. Not one person was sent to Rwanda. So this UK court decision has come in time to prevent people who are seeking asylum in the United Kingdom, who have every right to seek asylum and to have their arbitration heard for their asylum case in the United Kingdom, the country which they desire to get to. Those people will have those cases and those arbitrations happen in the UK, which is where it should be happening. So what we think will happen is the UK Tory party will come to its senses, will realize that this was a disaster from the beginning, will abandon this amoral and illegal plan, and will actually focus on giving asylum seekers their due process basic rights and allowing them to seek asylum in the UK and judge those asylum claims on a case-by-case basis, which, by the way, will also save the British taxpayers a lot of money. This UK deal with Rwanda was not only a boondoggle in the legal sense, but it was a boondoggle in the financial sense.
Louise Mudge is the Central Africa Director at Human Rights Watch. He spoke with me from the Chadian capital in N'Djamena. Right now, it's time for music from our African collection.
Man, man, the mission. I see no competition. And I mind my business. God is my witness. They don't see my vision. I'm a local judge anymore. No, one in a million. Waiting them to say like you now.
Africa on the English service of the Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington, D.C.
Timbani, catch you, watch you. Come on, why don't you finish?
Continent, and we hope you enjoyed it.
Tell your friends about VOA Africa, music, sports, and news.
Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Mike Hobbe, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, he who talks too much ends up talking nonsense. I'm your host, Peter Clotin, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.